This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. A new arrival to the tech landscape here in Chattanooga is a digital agency, the firm Viget, which specializes in branding, designing, and building software products and programs, chose to locate its newest office in Chattanooga in Hamilton County with plans to hire. Brian Williams is co-founder and CEO of Viget, that's V-I-G-E-T, and Zach Robbins is director of business development. Brian, Zach, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And welcome to Chattanooga.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Tell us more about what brought your company here.
Viget's been around for 20 years now. We started out in Washington, D.C. That's basically the area where I grew up. And we've always had a vision about expanding geographically. We're about 80 people now. We have a small kind of company culture. And as we got to be about 25 people in D.C. 15 years ago or so, we saw a need to expand to a remote location. So we started with Durham, North Carolina, 2006, 2007. Then in 2010, we went to Boulder, Colorado. And then as we got to be 65, 75 people here, it came to be time to look for another office location. And as we looked around, one of the things that popped up was Chattanooga. One of the things we really like about this city is the combination of many of the benefits we see in Boulder, outdoor lifestyle, lots of activities to do that have nothing to do with work day to day, combined with some of the things we see in Durham, North Carolina. So the kind of resurging downtown and lower cost of living and lots of the sort of benefits of a once proud city kind of coming back is a story we like to be a part of. That was one of the things that got us on the list.
And of course, the gig.
The gig, you know, we are a technology company, so fast internet is definitely a requirement. So that was some kind of a macro level from a business perspective. But anytime we look at a local office, we don't just kind of plop in and hire people locally. We always have to move somebody in from one of our other locations. And so Zach's kind of history with Chattanooga was certainly part of that.
I actually graduated from Covenant, and that was part of how I first experienced Chattanooga, and my wife's family is still in the area. And so we would come back to Chattanooga for holidays and family stuff. So I have seen the ways that Chattanooga has changed in the past 10 to 15 years. And part of that was the gig kind of serving as the center of the city's reemergence, and especially in technology and attracting startups to the area and attracting more talent and a larger, thriving, and more innovative business community. So I had never really experienced the business community until we started investigating the possibility of opening an office here. And one of the key factors in the decision was how open and collaborative the city is in connecting people and putting Chattanooga on the map more collaboratively. And that felt very true to our values, which were very much about sharing what we know with our industry and with our clients and with our peers. Our mission is to make the web a better place, and certainly coming to a city that not only has the internet as a part of its story, but also is collaborative in nature and trying to make Chattanooga great together was a big part of what attracted us here. Compared to other cities that were a little bit more competitive or closed off in nature, it would have felt harder to get plugged in. And here, one conversation led to five introductions, which led to 15 more, and so on and so forth. And here we are.
Tell us more about Viget's work and how it fits into the tech world.
We're a digital agency, and we are essentially a hybrid between a software development company and a digital marketing shop. As a digital agency, we help clients brand, design, and build digital products as well as marketing platforms. So we're a consultancy, and so that's actually one of the things that people ask about our strategy for opening remote offices away from our headquarters outside of DC. We are able to service clients anywhere in the country. In fact, more than half of our clients exist where we don't have an office. So we do a lot of work in Chicago and San Francisco and New York, Boston, so forth. And our philosophy has always been the best clients, the clients that we really want to work with, care most about the talent of the team that's going to be working on those projects, not so much where they are. And so having folks that are able to contribute to projects working remotely from US-based locations like Chattanooga works very well. So it's all about where can we recruit and retain the best talent. And so philosophically, we view Chattanooga as a great place for that. We'd love to have local clients. Certainly, we believe that will happen over time, but the focus is really more about talent than finding the clients here locally. So in terms of services and the internet being really important to that, We've believed for 20 years that the internet would revolutionize not only business, but humanity at large. We wanted to participate in that. So bringing together design talent with engineering talent, it was our kind of original vision, and that's expanded over the years in areas of things like user research and data analytics, you know, DevOps. There's just a ton of ways a business like ours has to evolve to basically keep up with market demand and the sophistication of some of the projects that we work on. And now we really think of ourselves as one of the premier shops in the country, able to deliver complicated, well-designed software solutions for clients ranging from major international nonprofits like the World Wildlife Fund to big media companies like ESPN or NBC Sports, and then lots of startups you have never heard of, but that went on to either be profitable independently or acquired by some of the big tech companies out in the Bay Area. So we love working with a wide variety of clients. That's part of what helps us attract and retain great talent is that variety of work. But it's all centered around digital, so having fast internet connections, very important. Well done, Chattanooga.
Give us an example that most people might recognize but not realize that it's Viget's work.
Probably a relevant example is worldwildlife.org. That is a site that we designed and developed actually 7 years ago. We launched it October 2012, but it is still the same code base and same software that powers the site, as well as the design in its core is in large part the same. And that was a great project from a lot of disciplines and services at Viget kind of combining for a great experience for the end user. And the story there is WWF, like many organizations, tend to provide and present content in a digital format in a way that reflects their organizational structure and the way that they administer their work, but not necessarily in the way that you or I might want to engage with that content or with that brand or business or that piece of software. And so our process of user-driven design and research behind all of our work, whether it's a set of features for a product or an application or the way that you want to interact with different content on a website. Good example from that was we did a combination of research and testing on how to organize WWF's content on their new site. And one of those research practices were in a card sort exercise, which is I basically give you 50 cards. And in this case, it was all of species that WWF seeks to protect and ask you to organize them as you see fit. So I don't force an organization structure upon you. You choose that for yourself. And then we draw correlation from that in terms of how many people correlate certain species with each other. And what we found, which was our hypothesis, is that scientific genome, while it has a lot to do with the way that WWF thinks about species, has nothing to do with the way that you or I think about species, which was their target audience, which was their donor. They see an elephant and a rhino, and they see big gray animal, and to a scientist, they know that they are very separate species and might categorize them on the site differently because they're scientifically different, but the way that users might want to interact with that is different. So then we also tested the new organization structure with a tool called TreeJack, which tested for success and failure rates on what we designed as an organization structure compared to what they previously had. And that was helpful in the process of making sure we had everything right and tweaked before we actually went live with the site. And in doing so, increased their revenue per donation significantly after launch. That's more on the kind of marketing platform side of what we do, but is potentially a more recognizable experience that people may have interacted with personally.
And with your company the size that it is, how do you navigate, how do you see the challenges, the debates when it comes to digital these days, whether we're talking about big tech, we're talking about privacy, we're talking about cyber, how does Viget fall into all of that?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about a lot internally. Because when we started, tech was new, internet tech was new, and I think we were viewed as sort of a cutting edge, kind of emerging services company. And then there was sort of the glory days of tech, and everybody loved to be working in tech and idolizing the big tech companies. And over the last few years, a lot of that mindset has shifted. We have always believed at Viget that technology can be good for humanity. We label ourselves as tech optimists. I had a engineering class back in Virginia and ethics in engineering, and the common question around ethical challenges or situations where technology has had a negative effect on humanity, the question was always, should we roll back that technology or should we push forward and implement newer, more advanced versions of that technology that will address those problems? And I was always on the tech optimist side. My personal view is, we are in a period of time where the problems that come up from the application of technology on a grand scale are being revealed. And we're finding those around privacy and data protections and all kinds of things. And the answer to me is not to cut off those advancements in technology. I think we can't forget all the great things that are happening thanks to technology in terms of healthcare or information sharing, education. There's all kinds of areas, environmental nonprofits, where a big space of ours. There's huge, huge positives that are coming from the application of internet technologies, but there's also a lot of downsides. And so we try to foster internally a lot of discussion around things like tech ethics. How can we help our clients understand some of these challenges that can be kind of nuanced and not obvious initially? And so we view that as a responsibility of our team from a consulting standpoint to help our clients understand those problems, to deal with them effectively, not just, you know, sort of legal issues around things like GDPR, but even unintended consequences of the application of their technology that we're helping to provide. So it's interesting because I think there's details of things that 5 years ago you wouldn't even think of that now, you know, you really have to take into account to the software that you're building.
Yeah, I'd say a key part of our process is asking hard questions. And that's both from in the context of conducting discovery, whether that's about your users or about your business or about the technology infrastructure that we're proposing or about the ethics of what we're doing, whether it's internally or externally with our clients. And so we're not yes people in the sense that we say to our clients, just give us a list of requirements and we'll go about and design and develop. We're kind of overkill for that from a consultant perspective. We are going to come in and ask a bunch of questions in order to figure out where we're at, where we're going, and how we're going to help you get there. And part of the questions that we ask are, how are you treating or using your data? How are you storing it? Things like that. And then we also ask that of ourselves internally, how we approach hard subjects that are just emerging that we've never really thought about the use case for. And we're having those conversations, hopefully, before we have them with a client, with ourselves, which helps us have that conversation better with clients.
Social media is one of those conversations now, and it was just emerging a dozen years ago.
Yeah, the social connections that the internet has provided, I think, have gone through an evolution to where they can be manipulated. People are realizing now that they're so widely adopted that those manipulations can be very valuable from a business perspective, and certainly from things outside of business, you know, being from DC, obviously the politics and all that sort of stuff, it can be pretty eye-opening what's possible there. And pretty challenging to imagine what the solutions are. I don't think there's easy solutions to some of these problems. Twitter announced that they weren't going to take any politically based advertisements. That's a huge financial decision that they're making. There's things like that that some of these massive platforms can make. But there's a very few number of huge companies like that that have that level of influence. So I think the practical application of ethical questions across the broader internet and a lot of our clients are more around things like accessibility, for example, which is an area that we focus a lot on. You know, Zach mentioned our mission is to build a better web, and we've sort of added to that over the years, build a better web for everyone. We do a lot of work to make sure that our client work is accessible, sometimes based on legal demands, but sometimes based on just being the right thing to do. Our core values, which we defined years ago, the first one is be good, hire ethical people, people of high integrity. So the whole company is filled with folks that think about these things and value these things and honestly wouldn't work at a company that doesn't take those types of things into account. So I think it puts us in a good position to help our clients make good decisions, but it's something that I think you got to continue to have open discussions about within your company. And that's something that we're certainly focused on for years to come.
One thing that your company offers is apprenticeships.
Our philosophy has always been to give back, as Zach mentioned again. So as much as we can, we share our knowledge through writing blog articles or speaking at conferences, contributing to open source software projects. We've done that for years. And years ago, we started to develop a summer internship program, 10 to 12 weeks for college students. And we found that to be a fantastic way to get new energy into the company and fresh ideas and obviously help these interns gain some professional experience, but also just the sense of community that brought. So we wanted to try to figure out how to expand the benefits of the internship program beyond just summer college students. And so the apprenticeship program kind of grew out of that. So it's a 10-week program. We do two cohorts a year. Typically, there's anywhere from 3 to 6 apprentices at a time. The apprentices are doing as much as possible work with clients. So typically not billing clients, but shadowing the team members that are. And so they get real hands-on experience in running projects or writing software, or designing products, all the things that we do, they're exposed to that. And I think just as importantly, they're exposed to the way the company operates, weekly staff meetings, quarterly retreats, how we handle performance reviews, how we approach people management, all the things that we've learned over 20 years, they're exposed to that. And it's, again, allowed us to bring in just some amazing people, personalities, and folks that we wouldn't have had a chance to work with otherwise. often career changers, people who are looking to get into tech, who have interest but no direct experience, maybe studied something different in college and realized later in their career that they wanted to get into creative tech. And so it's been fantastic. Our goal is to hire 50% of them, the apprentices that come through. So it's definitely a funnel for our recruiting channels, but it's also a way to build our network of people that have worked at Viget in some capacity. So they become part of our alumni group, which is an amazing group of folks as well. So we've been really proud of that effort. I think it's a classic win-win. The business definitely benefits, but I think it's also got great community benefits as well.
And while they're in the program, they're paid.
They're paid, yep. It's not a ton. I think it's a $6,000 payment for the 10 weeks. So the intent was to keep it at a budget level where we could support it, knowing that for the most part, they're not going to be generating any direct revenue. So there's not a lot of financial upside directly in the short term for the business. So to make it sustainable in the long run, we want to make sure that that's a balanced amount, but enough that it's palatable for folks. And what's been, again, rewarding to us is we've had people go through code schools where they've paid thousands, if not $10,000 or more for a code school experience. Then they've come to our apprenticeship program where we've paid them, and they've said how they've learned more in that apprenticeship program than they did in a code school. And it's not a knock on code schools. I think they provide a great service as well, but I think it's a good indication of, the win-win we're trying to create there.
Another reason or serendipitous intersection of Chattanooga and Viget's history is Center being here in Chattanooga and being one of the first schools of its kind, and specifically in our industry, in our space, led by someone that we have known for a long time, Jared Spool, and deciding to put Center's roots down here in Chattanooga with a new model of learning. And their model of learning is get students and apprentices or people coming through the program doing the work as much as possible. And that's how we've modeled our internship and apprenticeship program after, and really provides an opportunity for people that have wanted to get into technology and into our industry, but it's very hard to navigate later in someone's career. And so this is more of a stepping stone for those folks. And many of the folks that we've hired out of our apprenticeship program have been career switchers, worked at the government or other places entirely or other industries entirely, but had an interest in it and showed a lot of promise, and they've been great.
Where are you located now? And as you hire your staff here in Chattanooga, where will you be located beyond that?
We're a very organic growth company, so we're never necessarily either hiring ahead of the work that we have people to do or having a ton of work that people can't do and figuring out and scrambling how to do that work. The same goes also for kind of our office space decisions. So something that's different now that wasn't true when we opened Boulder and Durham is the emergence of co-working space. That didn't exist then, does now. And so we're actually in Society of Work in the Edney on the sixth floor, which is a great spot to be in the sense of getting plugged into the community. And that's been a great way to just get plugged in, as well as a very flexible way to get started. The other person here for Viget, Kurt, who's one of our senior UX designers, they moved here in the summer. And we basically got started on a Monday after we decided, let's go ahead and have a quote office here. And we had desk space the next morning and we were up and running, and there was no friction to that. We didn't have to go source through a broker and find a lease and then figure out how big we were going to be at some point and how much square footage we would need. So that's kind of our landing spot for now. And then based on how quickly we find good candidates and hire people, then we'd probably look to kind of sublet a smaller space. We've looked at spaces in Loveman's, which is a great spot, especially Lamppost Properties has done a great job renovating a lot of downtown buildings like the Co-op and others that could be good landing spots for us temporarily. And then we'd probably grow to kind of the size of one of our offices in Durham or Boulder in terms of square footage and lease opportunity and in terms of number of employees, which is around 25.
And where can people go online to find out more about Viget?
Viget.com, V-I-G-E-T.com. We have a careers section there, so folks that are interested in applying, there's a lot of information on that site. And you kind of get a feel for our culture, lots of links to our social channels, and all positive, ethical, social sharing from a Viget perspective. But yeah, we'd love to meet folks. When I first came to Chattanooga probably 20 years ago, driving through on a cross-country drive, it was easy to drive through quickly, but coming back, we just felt so welcomed by Mayor Burke and by the Chamber of Commerce and the business community here. So my sense is there's a lot of really good folks in town here. We're not trying to build a factory and hire 1,000 people. It's really going to be a special group. And I think that I'm looking forward to visiting over the coming years and meeting more and more folks that create a good nucleus of an office here. So I'm excited to meet those folks.
All right. Brian, Zach, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks. It's great being here.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More after our news with Bill McLean. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Riverbend returns to Chattanooga in May, with many changes made, acts announced with more to come, and tickets on sale. Mickey McCamish is executive director of Friends of the Festival, and before the holidays, he stopped by Scenic Roots. Mickey, thanks for joining us.
Ray, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to come back to WUTC. It's great to be here.
Always glad to have you here. So we're talking about Riverbend 2020. You have announced a lot of changes, but for folks who might be trying to sort out those changes, tell us about them.
Sure, Ray. The first thing is the dates of the festival. The festival will return for 4 days, and that's the 27th through the 30th of May. So hopefully the weather will be a little more cooperative in that it may not be as hot as though it were in the first 2 weeks of June. That's one of the changes that will remain this year with the festival. Now, the big change is the fact that the barge, which has been iconic to Riverbend for 30-plus years, is no longer a part of the festival. This year, the barge has gone away. Matter of fact, we have sold the barge. And the Coca-Cola stage will be underneath the Ojolly Bridge. Now, for the past several years, we haven't had use of the area underneath the bridge because of the construction going up on the Highway 27. But this year, we have that area back. It's a very large area. It's amazing whenever you, whenever you're not in that area and we haven't used it the past 3 years, that you just don't realize what a large area it is. But then you put a stage in there and it begins to shrink pretty quickly. And the stage is going to be a very large stage, about 60 foot in terms of its width. And it will have what I call an ego ramp. It's a ramp that enables the artist really to connect with the fans, with those attending the festival. And that was one of the disadvantages with the barge, the fact that you're 35 feet up in the air. Sort of reminds me of when I was in the Navy and on aboard a destroyer and we were 35 feet above the waterline. That same distance existed with the barge. And so there was that disconnect between the artist and the audience. And then the other thing was with the barge was the cost of putting into place, hooking it up, all the cranes that you had to have. It was an expensive operation. It was a $1 million operation just to bring the barge in, set it up, tear it down, and return it to Helltown.
More of a production than actually bringing the artists in.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the artists had to come in by boat. And for some artists that didn't care for water, that was an issue. We had to bring a few in by golf cart. So we eliminated several things in. We eliminated the fear of the water coming in by water. We eliminated the cost of actually hooking up the barge. And we also eliminated the disconnect between the artist and the audience. And with the new stage, the Coca-Cola stage underneath the Ojolly Bridge, big stage, a very large stage, it will have the VIP areas around the stage. And the ego ramp will be a connection. It will connect the artist with the festival goers. Along that line, the Bud Light stage will now move toward the middle of Chestnut Street. So that when you come into the festival, and the main entrance is still the same location, there at Aquarium Way and Chestnut Street, then you know you're at a music festival because the first thing you're going to see is the Bud Light stage there in the middle of Chestnut Street. So you'll know right away that you're at a music festival. Now, the Chevy stage that was in the green area, that stage will now move down to the hard edge where the barge set. So that stage moves from the green area down to the hard edge area. Now, the Tennessee Valley Federal Credit Union stage that was underneath there, the walkway, the river walkway, that stage will now move to in behind the aquarium, forward of the Market Street Bridge. So in essence, with Riverbend this year, we have a festival between two bridges. And that's what one of the taglines that we've chose to adopt is Riverbend is a festival between two bridges this year. So a lot of changes, hopefully all for the better. We just want people to come out, support the festival because it is Chattanooga's festival.
And it's been around for a long time. And there were changes last year with the number of days from 8 to 4 and moving it up earlier in the summer season and then how the numbers turned out. And now there are all these other changes with the barge and everything else that you've described and also the partnership with Songbirds.
Yes, and that's a great partnership. Songbirds bring to the table artist selection. They have been instrumental in working with Dixie Fuller, Bob Payne of our staff, with Johnny Smith and Mike Doerr of Songbird. Those are four people, not only the best in Chattanooga in terms of selecting the artist, but the best in the Southeast. So we've got the very best people out there that selected the artist. Songbirds is very successful. They know the type of music that Chattanooga likes, and therefore we've gone out and we've been able to contract those artists that we think will bring Chattanooga out, and that it's the music that Chattanooga will enjoy. And again, it's Chattanooga's festival, 39th year, and we want to do the things that will cause Chattanooga to come out to the festival.
And when you say Chattanooga's festival, just looking at the lineup so far, there's a concentrated effort this time to, even more than before, touch the different genres that make the music of Chattanooga.
That's exactly right. And that's the beauty of having Songbirds involved, is because they understand that and they know the different artists that with the different types of music that will reach the Chattanoogans. And if there's just a couple of them you like, it's well worth it. And Ray, another thing we've done is in the pricing. What we've done is we've returned the group sales opportunities. And for a group of 20 or so, you can buy a four-day wristband for $45. And if you're in excess of 100, then it's $40. So there's all sorts of opportunities out there in terms of making it affordable. Now, if it is a single and you just go, you don't have 19 other friends, but surely we all have that. And you just become the point person. You can get 19 other friends, and you can get a wristband for $45 for each of your friends. If you are single, though, and you just would choose to go online and purchase it online, then it's $65 when you go that route. We will be starting outlet sales, but that will not start until around April the 1st is what the plans are right now.
How are things doing so far?
Things are very busy with the introduction and the kickoff. We did the timing so that people would have an opportunity to make a unique Christmas gift to their friends, to relatives, and make it affordable. And so the activity has been very good. Sales have been very brisk. And that's what's got to happen. We've got to get the people out to the festival. And we're trying to do the things through music, through pricing of the festival, to cause that to happen.
So there are a lot of changes for tickets and for pricing, not only for adults, but also for children.
That's exactly right, Ray. Children 10 and under are free. And that's something, again, that we brought back this year for 2020 Riverbend. Another change that we've reincorporated this year.
And where can people go online for more information?
Riverbendfestival.com. And there's a buy ticket icon there. Just click on that, and you can make your choices of purchases right there. So Riverbendfestival.com.
All right, Mickey, thanks so much and all the best.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for having me again.
A nonprofit here in Chattanooga aims to provide group piano lab lessons to children and teens in the Eastdale area. The E.N. Bates Music Enrichment Program is holding a series of benefit concerts, and the first is tomorrow night at the Grand Falloon, starting at 7 p.m. It's a tribute to Anita Baker, an evening with Carla Felicia Scaife. Celeste Bates Scaife is Carla's mother and director of the Music Enrichment Program. Celeste, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell us more about the program.
Well, the program's mission is to provide group piano lab lessons to children, teens, ages 5 to 17 years, regardless of payment capability. We became 501c3 nonprofit status November 2017, and we're still fundraising, so I guess our target is June to start the program.
This program was launched as a memorial to your father.
Right. Reverend Edward N. Bates, or Ian Bates, he was the pastor of Greater Second Baptist Church, and he also was assistant principal at Chattanooga High School. So he understands the concept of music on children's brains, that kind of thing. But with myself, he determined when I was younger that I had some kind of gift, I guess banging on doors and that kind of thing. He said, he told my mother, she has something special. So I started taking piano lessons at 5. So I've been playing almost 56 years now.
You are in the process of raising funds,
right,
and gathering teachers.
We're thinking about using music majors as facilitators for these classes. That's correct.
And tell us more about where you're looking for teachers.
Here at UTC, Lee, Southern Adventist, the area schools.
Looking at your website, you talk about the group lab approach for teaching piano. Tell me more about that.
Well, it seems that children, I would say, are more free in a group lab environment because of the positive competition between students. It's more social. They meet new friends, and there's a confidence level after a while.
And there's less pressure.
Yes, that's true. There's less pressure.
Because you're part of a group.
Right.
Everybody has their own keyboard, but they're also wearing headphones.
Right.
So they can interact with the teacher and not step on each other.
Right. The teacher has the capability of a private lesson for 5 or 10 minutes while the other ones are doing other things. So I think that's a big positive.
Once you raise the funds that you need and you hire the teachers that you need, what's next?
Well, we will continue the fundraising process because we don't want to add any costs to the students' parents. So we'll continue to obtain grants, that kind of thing. But as far as the program is concerned, we will have twice a year recital, and we'll probably do something regarding fundraising with that. We will partner with other nonprofits that may have the same idea for music. I think that the problem has been that we have these programs and then they play for maybe 3 or 4 months and stop. But I did take piano lessons at Shoddick. So I want to kind of have that kind of feel to it, not just throwing a child on the piano and let them have the opportunity, but we want to have some serious music students out there, piano students.
Where do you plan to teach the students?
Our target is the Eastdale community of East Chattanooga. So we're looking at the modular classroom, and it will be placed between Shalford Road and Tunnel Boulevard. So we're looking at property in that area. My father's church is where he was, is Shalford Road and Tunnel Boulevard. So I want to stay in that same vicinity.
What will the cost be for the parents, for the students?
There won't be any cost.
So all the fundraising
right.
is to ensure
right.
that the students can learn for free.
Right. Don't have to worry about that.
How many students do you plan to teach, and what process for accepting students?
Well, each class is 8. The lab is, I have 9 pianos, 1 for the instructor, and 8. These are digital pianos. We'll probably start with a Saturday or a Monday date. I think what we'll probably do is just send a survey out to parents in that area, because we've already done the research, and try to get to them and see their needs for their children and grandchildren.
Because it's not only about teaching children, it's also about engaging with the community.
Right, right.
Building community.
Right. There are no programs in that area like it, so be the first. That's what we're trying to do.
As part of trying to do that, you have something special coming up.
It's our annual premiere event, the Tribute Series. And the first installment of that is January 11th at the Grand Falloon, starting at 7 o'clock. And it's a tribute to Anita Baker, an evening with Carla Felicia Scaife, who is my daughter. And Frank Bumpus, saxophonist, will be featured.
And tell me more about your daughter.
Well, my daughter, 2017, she released a song, a contemporary Christian album. And then 2018, she released a crossover R&B neo-soul song. She's in Divinity School at Vanderbilt right now, getting her master's in theological studies.
So she's got a lot going on.
Yeah, she's got a lot going on, but she's a very good vocalist.
Why the tribute to Anita Baker?
That's been one of Carla's influences, is Anita Baker. Last year when Anita Baker did her final tour, we went to Atlanta, my daughter and I, and she was just in awe the whole time, but she loves Anita Baker, so I thought it'd be fitting for her to start the series off with Anita Baker.
And where can people go online for more information about the tribute and about the program?
Well, the website is enbatesmusicenrichmentprogram.org. The tribute series website is thetributeseries.org, or you can go to Eventbrite and put the tribute series and it should come up. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram.
All right. Celeste, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. Our show is produced by Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Follow us on Twitter at ScenicRoots423 and email us at ScenicRoots423@gmail.com. Also, follow WUTC on Facebook and Instagram and listen online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. Have a good weekend, and join us again next time for Scenic Roots.